There's an Argentinian doctor whose life changed immensely when he began to travel. This doctor partnered up with a friend and they set out on a grand adventure. The pair rode a motorbike through South America, experiencing a world they'd only dreamt about, meeting people, seeing things, forming opinions, and moulding ideas. Pretty soon, the doctor named Ernesto had become the revolutionary known as Che. He fought a war in Cuba. He was shot and killed in Bolivia. He was immortalized in t-shirts of university students the world over. And it all began with a holiday. Not everyone will go through such a massive change on their travels as Che Guevara, but we're all altered in some way. We all return home from a big adventure, a slightly different version of ourselves. Maybe a smarter version, maybe a hardened version, maybe one more compassionate or wise. Travel changes us all. It's just a question of how much. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. Today, we're getting a little philosophical, a little introspective. We're examining the transformative nature of travel, the way an adventure changes your outlook, changes your opinions, and changes who you are at your core. To do this, I have two of my favourite travel writers along for the ride. First up, she's a writer and adventurer whose transformation began with a trip to Florence at the age of 14, Flip Burns.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Flip. Welcome. Hi.
Thank you, but I think that you tell everyone that they're your favourite travel writer.
Oh, that's not true at all.
That is... And I, also...
I only have one. I only have two, sorry.
Oh, wrong.
Oh, there we go. There's an admission.
Yeah, already. And I wasn't aware that we were getting philosophical. I thought we were just having a chit-chat.
Oh, no, it's deeply philosophical
deep.
Today.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm going to have to dig deep.
It's going to get real.
Okay.
Of course, also with us, he's now, I have to say, one of my favourite travel writers.
One of
an award-winning writer. Whose adventures encouraged him to give up being an IT nerd, Rob McFarland.
Hello,
Rob.
I'd say there's still a small part of Rob, which is an IT nerd.
Oh, I think there's a large part.
Yeah. He just doesn't have IT in front of anymore.
He has like Excel spreadsheets for just about everything.
Oh, yeah.
So, guys, this stuff is real. So there's a study in the US that concluded that people who live in foreign countries understand themselves better than people who don't. There's another study that found that spending money on travel makes you a happier person. So do you guys buy into this as well? Do you think travel changes who you are eventually?
I have a theory that you are born with a base temperament.
Okay.
And especially, yeah. I don't know, seeing young children, my own young children, you either come out, kind of mellow person or a super active person. And I just think that's a default personality thing and that doesn't really change.
Right, okay.
However, there are so many other elements of, your outlook and everything that can be nurtured through travel and being exposed to different situations. So, I think it's definitely transformative.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to change who you are.
Okay.
But I think it's going to change maybe a lot about you.
What about you, Rob? Has your base changed over the years or just little bits and pieces?
Deep,
I know, that's a bit fast.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to warm us up.
Ooh, that's a good one. Do I agree with that? I think I do. I think you have a sort of default wiring that probably determines your outlook and level of optimism and pessimism and things like that.
Yeah.
What I think can change is your sort of value system. So you can grow up in a, say, one society and value particular things, and then certainly this happened with me, and then I then started traveling and then placed more emphasis on experiences rather than possessions, for example. And so I think, and traveling is a really good example of that, which can change your outlook about something like that.
Mm.
So I definitely think I'm a different person now to who I was before I started doing travel, I guess, for work.
Yeah, and I guess also just going on for that is that it can change your expectations of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Your limits, like what you think of you're capable of, and certainly as we talk further, like we'll go into some of the adventure addiction that I kind of stepped into, and the world very much became my oyster, and I became a person that I never envisaged I could be at one point.
How about this this Che Guevara story? Does that kind of resonate with
Doesn't happen to everyone?
I mean, in some ways.
I guess so. I mean, I think that's obviously a fairly extreme example. But I guess it does show that sort of transformative power of travel and how you can.
Yeah, I think it was the things he saw on that trip. Like, he saw the way workers were being treated in mines and stuff as he travelled around. And he felt that the working man had no rights and that he felt, he wanted to take up arms and make a difference in some way. Which, if he just stayed in Buenos Aires, probably never would have done. Have you taken up arms against anyone, Flip, at all? Have you been to war? just your children.
No. Just what flashed across my mind is, and I appreciate Che and his transformative, journey.
And his t-shirts.
His presence on university t-shirts.
It also reminds me a lot of backpackers that, you come across in Southeast Asia.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, but this guy actually, picked up a gun and shot people.
Yeah, I guess. Probably a bit extreme. But,
But yeah, I know what you mean. There's so many people who, oh, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this when I get home, and then they don't.
Oh, yeah, they think that they are having the journey. They go back to being stockbrokers. And they need to tell you about the journey, and no one's ever had that journey before, For sure. And that's the thing, like, even though travel is transformative, I don't think it makes you a better person than other people, and I don't think that necessarily everyone wants to hear your... how much you changed while you were overseas, because you know sometimes the glow comes off. But what was the question again?
Oh, they definitely don't.
Sorry. <laughs> It's okay.
Do you guys remember what you were like when you first started traveling, Rob? You were sort of, I guess, slightly later in life that you started heading off overseas.
Yeah, I mean, I'd done some travel with my parents when I was younger, but it was very sort of family holiday style. Yeah. And so I really didn't do my sort of own proper travel until I was in my late 20s.
Yeah.
And that sort of started with a trip out to New Zealand to do a bus tour around New Zealand.
Yeah.
And that was. Even though I'd sort of had some life experience, I'd worked for a little while, I found that genuinely terrifying because I didn't get that whole backpacker culture, and I didn't really know how to be in that environment.
Yeah.
And so I'd come from quite a corporate background, and I was terrified of not being cool enough. And you know,
there's a photo of you in a double-breasted suit carrying a briefcase in London, which was probably just before you took off for this grand adventure.
That's how I turned up to that to that tour.
To a youth hostel in Hawaii.
Why hasn't everyone got a briefcase? It's the perfect hand luggage. So I was still fairly nervous and apprehensive about it. As you are going into any sort of new situation or new environment, but you know, as we'll go to talk about, it definitely changed my outlook and changed my value, and also my sense of appreciation. So often you need to go away to appreciate what you have somewhere else, and also just how lucky you are. And I think that's what happens when you see other cultures. You tend to appreciate how lucky we are when we live in somewhere like Australia, when we don't have to work in those conditions, or we don't have those sorts of societies. So that a sense of sort of gratitude and appreciation, I think that is a good reminder.
Yeah,
together.
Yeah. How about you, Flip? You were 14 when you went off on your first big adventure.
I was.
Do you remember what sort of outlook on the world you had back then?
Sure.
A fairly naive one, I would assume.
I did, but I was a big dreamer, believe it or not, at the age of 14.
Knock me down with a feather.
I know. I was really into my literature, and just to set the scene, so we had 5 children in our family, and every time that Dad had a conference, someone got the lucky dip and you got to go. So my brother got to go to Darwin. Somehow I got to go to Florence. So I definitely got the long straw on that.
Yep.
And I happened to be studying Italian at the time, and I was reading a book called The Agony and the Ecstasy, which is about the life of Michelangelo, with a little bit of Leonardo da Vinci in there.
You were a weird 14-year-old, huh?
I was probably a better 14-year-old than I think I, anyway. Yeah, so this trip ended up being like a big bang, you know, equivalent in that it just blew my life apart.
Right.
And I was going just with the biggest eyes, the most romantic notions. Yeah. And we were
and it is an amazing place.
It is an amazing place, but I'd really, been studying it. And so when I arrived there and people were speaking this language that I'd been studying, suddenly I saw that, it was like, it was like being on another planet for me.
Did it make you think, wow, I'm in love with Italy, or wow, I'm in love with the world? Like, did it make you think, what about the other possibilities that are out there? Or did you just think, this is my place?
I knew this was the start of my place.
Yeah.
I knew that, well, obviously, because, with the Italian language and stuff and interest, I knew that that was going to be a big thing. I'm not Italian at all, by the way, just, came across this interest. But it certainly was going to lead onto big things, and it did. But, I was so into it to the point where I was in the chapel where Cosimo de Medici, I was a strange 14-year-old, was being married off, to a family of influence, and Michelangelo was deeply in love with her. And he was at the back of the chapel, according to this book, watching this marriage unfold. And it's quite a small chapel, the Medici Chapel, and it's, got jade green marble with hints of burgundy and some beautiful grey stripes. I mean, I can describe it perfectly because even all these decades later, I can remember the
5
moment.
5 years later.
Yeah, thanks. and I could imagine, Cosima up there, and Michelangelo crying at the back, and it was where hearts were broken in his chapel, and I was there, and I was touching the marble that had been there. I remember grabbing Mum by the arm and just going, we're here, and this is what happened, and you be Michelangelo, and I'll be Cosima, and I'll be, and Well, mum's...
She would think, God, I wish I got like, the Darwin guy.
Yeah, she should have gone to Darwin. But we have often spoken about that. I almost called my first daughter Florence because this is where my real travel lust began.
Real epiphany.
It was a real epiphany. Yeah. And, that was the trip that changed my life. And often when mum and dad say, you disappear all the time as a travel writer, I'm like, well, who started that?
Whose fault is
who
that?
Who took me to Italy? for me, it was a massive thing at 14. Your mind is so impressionable, and I just urge anyone with teenage children to do a big trip like that because as you get older, and I don't know if you agree, but you know, you get a little bit more set in your ways, but as a teenager your eyes are just so wide, and just, you know, walking on the street and talking to people and seeing the way that their clothes were cut, it was like being on another planet but on the earth, and I knew that I could just get there with a plane. It just changed everything about me. So when I went to university, I studied Italian, did everything in the linguistics sector, ran out of anything to do, you know, from Italian politics to drama to literature, and ended up teaching Italian, and then ended up working on the Olympics in Turin. And that started, you know, part of my press operations for the IOC. So it had direct ramifications on my life from that one trip. I've still got a book. Still got train tickets from that trip.
Yeah.
Where it all began.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Rob, I've always thought that the sort of the most noticeable change in pretty much everyone who travels is their confidence. Like, I feel like you get a lot more confidence from going out there and seeing the world. And you know, getting yourself into the odd sticky situation or intimidating a situation and figuring out that you can actually get out of it just fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really almost important thing for anything to do. Anytime you're put into a situation where you're not feeling particularly comfortable and you feel like a little bit vulnerable and you get through it, then you sort of store that in your little bank of confidence and it gives you that to call on in lots of other places. And so, and let's face it, people push that to the extremes where you'll get that sort of adrenaline junkie where they're trying to do more and more outrageous things in order to get that feeling again.
Yeah, I think that's why people go to countries that are more and more off the beaten track as well, because they want to feel that old sort of buzz of going somewhere new and having the challenge.
Totally, yeah. And there is that, sort of coming back to what Flip was saying earlier about that sort of backpacker ethos, that unless you have crawled over the border and bribed, naked and bribed the guard, and then you're not really traveling. And I certainly don't subscribe to that theory anymore. It's okay. We can do it, you know, the comfortable way and stay in a nice hotel and still be out of our comfort zone, maybe with the language or the food you get confronted in lots of different areas of your life when you travel. Yeah. And I think it's I think it's only a good thing. And coming back to Flip's point, I think it's really important to do that when you're young, because I didn't do it until I was older, I already had some pretty hard set ideas about lots of different things. Mm. And I think the other thing that travel does is when you go to places and you get first-hand experience, you can question those values and ideas based on the first-hand experience rather than what your parents have told you or what you've been taught at school or read in the newspaper.
Yeah.
And if anything, my views have sort of softened on lots of things because I've realised they're much more nuanced than I thought before I actually went there.
Right, okay. And Flip, you said you realised that you could travel on your own. I mean, that's a confidence thing as well, I guess, that you can take on the world solo.
Yeah, but I do like Rob's bank of confidence. I think that you could market that as a product that people can come and withdraw from.
Online bank of confidence.
Yes. I love travelling by myself.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore it. And I don't know why, because I do obviously enjoy the company of people.
Yeah.
But if you had to send me to Nepal for a month by myself, I've really got no problem with that.
Was that intimidating to start with, though?
No.
Really?
No, it really wasn't. I can't even actually remember my first solo trip. Oh, yes, I can. It was actually one of my first assignments as a freelance writer, and it was in Bangkok. And I knew that Bangkok was going to be exciting. I was just, happy to be part of the gang. But I then did a trip up to Angkor Wat by myself, just to get another story.
Yep.
I just remember coming into the airport, and I just got a guy on a moped who picked me up, and we were just roaring through Cambodia. And I would have been 24, and I had like the wind in my hair, and a bunch of live pigs went past on the next motorbike, and I don't know, I just felt so alive, and like the world was my oyster.
Yeah. Intrepid travellers may come from all walks of life, but they have one thing in common: the desire to travel for good. That means supporting the local economies in the destinations they visit and only leaving footprints. But most importantly, connecting with the local people and culture through real-life travel experiences. That's why an intrepid traveller leaves a place feeling more inspired than when they arrive. Start planning your own life-changing adventure at intrepidtravel.com. Rob, what about travelling through the developing world? Because one of your first trips after coming to Australia was to head over and do an overlander in Africa. Did that sort of change the way you saw the world, having experienced, you know, a different way of life, a different sort of style of living?
Absolutely, yeah. And that was a really... lots of different reasons. I mean, you know, you see pictures of Africa and you see things in the news, but until you're there and you experience it, both in a different cultural sense, but also in people's different standards of living, then that was incredibly powerful. And that I started in New Zealand, came over to Australia, and that sort of gave me the appetite for travel. And then I then wanted to go and see more places and more what felt like more intrepid places.
Yeah.
And Africa was a huge deal to do that. And that then led me to go to other places where there'd be different cultures. And you get to experience those things firsthand, and you come back with an actual opinion based on having seen something, not from the thing that you've read in, as I say, in the paper or whatever.
Yeah.
So it was really, and it was just this eye-opening thing that there's so many different places in the world with different cultures, and people have such different standards of living and ways of living.
Yeah.
And it was really, it was intoxicating.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine, you know, going to some places that are maligned, particularly in the press. Like the trip I did to Iran, that was a place that I was sort of really intimidated by before I got there, because it seems like it's this scary destination. And then to arrive there and find, you know, just how warm and friendly everybody is, it really, you know, it makes you think that the rest of the world, you don't understand it until you go there.
Absolutely. And I just went to Berlin for the first time. I must be the only Australian who hasn't been to Berlin yet, but I went there literally a few weeks ago. And I spoke to some people who had grown up in East Germany and under communism. And there's that perception that, oh, that must have been terrible and horrible, and you must have had a terrible childhood. And I spoke to these people, and they had delightful childhoods.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
They were happy, and they was family-oriented. And all right, we didn't have six choices of television. We could only buy the one radio and the one thing. But that was great, because we weren't paralyzed with this agony of choice that we have now in
the US. And if that's all you know, then you don't really miss...
Totally. But it wasn't this hardship and gruel. And I'm sure there are places which were communist where it was like that.
Yeah.
But the people I spoke to, and it totally changed my viewpoint on that whole thing. A really strongly held belief I'd had that then got challenged by the virtue of actually meeting people who'd been in there.
Yeah.
I think as a female traveller, something that's equally interesting to go and experience and perhaps change your opinion on is travel in Islamic countries, where you really stand out because you are dressed differently, and, you know, you might be behaving slightly differently, and then to get there and just, you know, find the warmest welcomes and people who are just so keen to share their culture with you, whether that be in Morocco or, you know, the United Emirates or Oman. It's just something that I think you really have to go and get immersed in and ask a lot of questions and just completely... I know that I was intimidated by traveling to Arabic countries, and now they're hands down some of my favorites.
And I would that was one of my other things I was going to say, because I think that's a really big point, particularly with the press coverage that part of the world has had in, you know, recent years. There's a sort of tendency to associate it with this extremism, and then you go there and you realise that there are whole countries full of very tolerant, you know, understanding people who are just like everyone else in the world, and that media portrayal of those elements, you know, isn't all of that particular country.
And so well educated, you know, with these incredible histories and incredible cuisines. They just want to share it with you. And, that doesn't really, you know, get told, because it's not sensational as what a lot of the headlines have to be.
Yeah.
And culturally so different and just so engaging and
And completely
amazing.
Different views of the world as well.
I
was in Kazakhstan recently and we were talking about politics and talking about Vladimir Putin. And the person that I was talking to was quite a young Kazakh. She was saying that Vladimir Putin's very popular in that country and in much of the former Soviet Union. And I said, oh, you know, why is that? What do you guys like about him? She said, well, you know, he's not scared to stand up to the bad countries. Mm. And I was like, oh, okay, what are the bad countries? She was like, you know, like the EU and Britain and stuff. It's like, oh, okay, right. You know, the ones that I come from, I get you.
Yeah. And it says something about national characters. I met someone Russian recently, and I said that I had the same conversation with him. And they said that people really admire his strength, because that's something in Russia that's really admired, that standing up for what you believe in. Yep. And
catching
and
bears with your shirt off.
Exactly.
And horse riding. I think he was, had his shirt off when he was on a horse, when he was catching the bears.
You guys have obviously both become much more adventurous over time with your travels, haven't you? Flip, you've done some ridiculous things.
Yeah, things started to get a little bit out of control there.
That 14-year-old
in Florence
would surely be surprised by some of the things you ended up getting up to.
I think it all started really with, well, obviously I've got a great-grandfather who's an Antarctic explorer, so that always, you know, put a little
bit in your blood.
Well, I don't know about that, but put a bit in my bonnet, that's for sure. So the first thing really was a trip up Mont Blanc, a climb of Mont Blanc, and I think a lot of people actually underestimate Mont Blanc. It's not the fitness, it's just the height, and I'm quite scared of heights.
Yep.
And so I thought this could be a good challenge. And then Just loved it, loved everything about it. I love the thrill of it. I love the physical challenge of it, the mental challenge of it, yeah. the people that I met mm-hmm. on the mountain. And then that led on to Kilimanjaro, and yeah. then I enjoyed that as well, and then thought, well, I'll just climb Mount Elbrus, which is technically the highest in Europe,
yeah.
If you don't count Mont Blanc, okay. which is Western Europe. The overall
that sounds very technical.
Yeah, it does. Geographically speaking, if you include yeah. Russia within okay. Europe, which some do in the mountain world, then okay. it's Elbrus.
Gotcha.
It's
gotcha.
One of the seven summits.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, if I'm going to go up that far, because the descent is the bit that hurts, I'll just snowboard down. So accidentally, I became the first Australian woman to climb and snowboard down Mount Elbrus. but in between...
Nothing like just setting accidental world records.
It was it yeah. wasn't accidental. I actually haven't told too many people about that. This is my formal announcement.
This is the first time I've heard that for a long yeah. time.
Have you not heard that,
Robert
Roo? Really? No. Okay. Yeah, I don't tell people because that's not why I went there. Right. You know, it was just an added bonus, I guess. But the big run really was Greenland. So I was amping up to find my ancestor to the South Pole on yeah. his trip with Shackleton.
Yeah.
And as a training trip, was going to ski across Greenland, mm-hmm. like, you know, for some sled hauling to get that kind of training because sure. it's one of the ice caps of the world.
Yeah.
Thought it'd be a bit faster.
They're skiing behind a big sail, is that right?
No, that's just like pulling the sled, like, you know, what the explorer
oh, right.
is with
okay.
all of your
yeah,
stuff
yeah,
in
yeah.
it.
Okay.
And then I figured out that it'd be a lot easier if I kite skied.
Right.
No point pulling before you have to. So I thought, as I joined an international kite ski team, went
to
do...
We knew they existed.
yeah, as Arctic Kites, if anyone cares to look them up.
Yeah.
There were four of us. And I went to do a couple of survival courses in Norway. And that was one of the things where Mum and Dad, I had a chat with them and I said, if I need to get my skills up, I need to go to Norway because that's where the polar experts are.
Yeah.
And Mum and Dad said, that sounds like a good idea. You should go. And I was like, really? By myself? All the way across the world to live on an ice cap with people I don't know for 5 days? And they're like, yes. And I was like, okay.
yeah,
so, yeah. Enablers. so I would have been the first woman to ski across Greenland, Australian.
Yeah.
And also we're forging a new route that no one had ever done before. But again, accidental because that was just the way the winds were going and
right.
we were kite skiing. So I was accidentally getting myself into some high-profile trips, I guess. And, of course, I didn't make it, which
right.
everyone thought I'd be so sad after that trip. Mm-hmm. But, in fact, I just came back ecstatic because I'd been so far, I'd prepared for it for so long. Everyone has a dream. How often do you get to make that dream happen? And how yep. it turns out is often as it was on that time, way beyond your control. But travel really made me become another person in that I firmly believe that anything is possible
yeah.
If you train hard enough and work hard enough and
yeah.
do those types of things, and it will take you into worlds that you've just never dreamed of.
Yeah.
And that's definitely where it's taken me. It's taken me literally to great heights, literally to the lowest of lows, where I've really had to, at the end of that Greenland failure, if you want to call it that, yeah, I had a week to wait for the kite ski team to finish. I had a lot of time sitting in a little place called Ilulissat in an igloo because I'd kind of run out of money under the midnight sun. I had a lot of time to think about myself and how I felt about this defeat. And I'm really happy to say that if you talk about, again, that default personality, I'm just a happy person at
yeah.
the base of it who can make the best of a situation.
And, yep. and Rob, you went on to do some things like just like that too, didn't you?
I think we've run out of time, haven't we? So I guess I feel like the world's biggest scaredy cat now
yeah.
by comparison
yeah.
to that. I mean, I'm the same. I used to have a lot of fears of things like spiders and snakes and heights.
Yeah.
And I guess I was been quietly proud of challenging those over the years. And most of that was through travel. So I went over to Africa. I went and rafted on the Zambezi,
yeah.
Which I think you remember you've done as well.
Yeah.
And that was pretty terrifying. That,
yeah.
That's a
big rapids.
Big
yeah.
rapid. Yeah. But it gave me this... It was terrifying, but I survived, and
yeah.
also I really enjoyed it. So I
yeah.
went on to do a whole bunch of rafting trips through the Grand Canyon and the Futaleufú in Patagonia and some multi-day trips in the US, and it opened my eyes to that adrenaline-fueled experience. So I definitely got more intrepid.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But what I like, and how we've just discussed as well, about the transformative power of travel is that it's such a different thing. And even people might say, oh, but Rob, you know, like you can do grade 12 rapids if they exist. And oh, Flip, you know, you've done this thing. But I highly encourage Susie, you know, who's 54 and who's never traveled, who would be terrified of going on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
For that, to me, is a major accomplishment. Like, accomplishments are so relative. And,
yeah, yeah, everyone has their own comfort
yeah.
zone.
Yeah, and like, you know, yeah. people say to you, but you did all this stuff. I'm like, yeah, but you went and did a, you know, cooking school in Thailand. Like, how is that less amazing than what I've done. You know, you've just done what you've liked and you've probably challenged yourself in some way. There's no contest when it comes to, you know.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because sometimes there is, isn't there? And then when you get into these travel conversations, you get this sort of slight one-upmanship of, oh, well, you've already done this. Well, I've been there, but have you been there? And that's the sort of side of travel,
Flip
which
sort
is,
of ended that for us, didn't you?
Pretty much. That's played the big trump card.
No, that's a South Asia backpacking conversation, like when you're in Southeast Asia. And you say, I went to Sicily, and some guy goes, yeah, but I went to Sicily, and I was like, you know, on Mount Vesuvius, abseiling, while it was erupting. And you're like, okay, there's always one of those.
Flip, I really like your idea, but we were discussing this before the episode, that you have these destinations that you call a static marker, where you keep going back over your life, and you realize that you're a slightly different person every time you go there. Paris is one of them.
Yeah,
for you,
I'm sure that Rob has these as well, and you probably do
too. Absolutely,
Ben.
Yeah. I'd never thought about it before, but when I did, I thought,
it's a static marker.
Totally did.
So Paris is one of those for me in that I think I went there first working the Rugby World Cup, and then I've been there with my mum. I've run a marathon there, and then went back pregnant, and then went back with my daughter. So every time I go there, I'm using the city in a different way.
Yeah.
And I realize that I'm changing, and against the static marker of the city staying the same. Yeah. So for me, every time I go to Paris, I kind of wonder, what am I going to be? And I always make a point of standing in front of the Notre Dame, and I always take time out and kind of see where I'm at.
Assess your life.
Because,
and who you are.
The Notre Dame is now an old friend that's heard many of my secrets.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
that's so cool.
Every couple of years.
Do you do that as well, Rob?
Yeah.
Do you have that?
No, I guess I do. The place, I haven't thought about that before, and I think it's a really lovely concept. The place for me that would most closely resemble it would be New York. So I used to spend a few months in New York each year, and I think this happens with a lot of places, that initial thrill of going somewhere for the first time, you know, that oh my God, everything's new, this is amazing, and then going back there and having that familiarity with it.
Yeah.
And you almost mourn the loss of that new feeling you had when you first went there, but then there's also this lovely familiarity. And so, I think I go to New York at least twice a year, and I think that for me would be the equivalent.
For me, it's probably Barcelona. Like, it's not my favorite city in the world. I do love Spain, but it's a place that I tend to go back to over and over again. And I went there when I was a 17-year-old backpacker, and I've been back there, you know, with girlfriends, and I've been back with single and brokenhearted, and I've been there working on tours and working as a travel writer. And now that I think about it, it has kind of made me reflect on the person I've been at all those other trips beforehand, and sort of realize how much I've changed in the meantime.
Sure, and that sort of becomes like a friend that catches you in a way in all your different, you know, variations of life. And for me, like, Paris is also, it's haunted. I mean, I can turn around a corner and find a place where I had a crepe, you know, accidentally. And God forbid, you know, touch wood, if anything happens to, I had a great trip there with my mum. You know, that's where I'll go to find her.
Yeah.
You know, because I have so many beautiful memories of her there. So, it's an important place, and I think it will, you know, continue to be. And like you said, everyone has one. It doesn't have to be international, New York, Paris, or Barcelona. It's a little bit international. Might be Wollongong, you know? It could be Jarvis Bay. Like, it could be anywhere where you've created memories.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a really nice way to wrap up the episode, Flipper. It's such a great idea. But just finally, I was going to ask you guys, you know, for people who really want to have a transformative experience, for people who want to have an epiphany, are there certain destinations? Is there one destination that you think they should go to experience that?
Two elements to that. One is to, as we talked about, find wherever your comfort zone is with something. So whether it's food or adventure, and then find somewhere to push that a little bit, because you're going to change the result of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the biggest thing for me was something culturally different. So,
so
like the Middle East or somewhere which is so different to where you've grown up, or Africa, you'll get India, that you'll get an amazing insight into yourself and also the world.
Yeah. How about you, Flip? I mean, which country is or which city has changed you the most, do you think?
I just remember my first journalism trip to Bangkok and Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
And like Rob said, you know, going with the guidance of something kind of guided or planned for you, like in a place like Bangkok. But then when I was a little bit more confident, so I developed that confidence bank, you know, I went and cashed it in and, you know, hopped on that motorbike in Cambodia and sat dawn by myself watching the sunrise over Angkor Wat. So, you know, and it's always good to have somewhere, I think, where you have a safety net. But once you get the taste for it, you'll just go further and further and further. And someday you wake up and you go, how did this happen?
For me, I would, Rob, you mentioned this. I would say India would be the country to, you know, you may love it, you may hate it, you may love it and hate it at different times of the day.
Yeah.
But it's just such an amazing experience to go there and just see the way a part of the world works, that, you know, and it, in a way that it doesn't anywhere else. And it's just such a, it's such a huge experience, such a big experience. You know, every single day, every day you open the door and walk outside, you're sort of preparing yourself for the onslaught.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone could walk away from that unchanged, really.
No, it's quite an extreme country. Anyway, I would almost suggest Sri Lanka as an India light.
Yeah.
You know, people might want to start in Sri Lanka. Make your way up to India. But you're right, that's interesting then. Yeah.
Robert Farland, Flip Burns, thank you so much for joining me today. Really appreciate your time.
A bit sad, I thought we were just getting started.
We are. Yeah. Unfortunately.
We'll take this to the pub now.
Yeah. But if you'd like to read any stories by the three of us, you can check them out on traveller.com.au. And if you'd like to subscribe to Flight of Fancy, go to iTunes or your favourite podcasting app. And we'll see you next time on Flight of Fancy.